Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled. From the studio gym where excuses never apply, it's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
That's right. I'm in the studio gym today and back from the Olympia. Had a great time in Las Vegas. It was a lot of fun. And now it's time to get back to work. Important subjects to talk about. Before we get started on today's show, I have to mention something that our sponsor, Primordial Performance, who is blowing out all their pro hormones because they're changing their line, is completely out of Formistain. Formistain in 1T, but they still have plenty of Androhard, Turinabol, and Dermacrin, and they're offering a 10, 20, 30, and 40% discount when you buy 1, 2, 3, or 4 bottles. So the more you buy, the deeper the discount. Check them out. Go to primordialperformance.com before they run out. Okay. We've done a lot of shows about the thyroid. You can't talk enough about the thyroid, really. Today we're going to be discussing functional medicine's approach to the thyroid with Dr. Brian Walsh. How you doing, Dr. Walsh?
I'm fantastic.
Thanks. Are you fantastic because you take care of your thyroid?
You take care of everything, and the thyroid takes care of itself.
You know, it's amazing to me. The thyroid function in general is really overlooked by mainstream medicine. They look at TSH by itself, and looking at TSH by itself is akin to trying to gauge how fast you're driving by looking at the distance between the gas pedal and the floorboard, saying, well,
sure,
I must be doing about 60 because I'm halfway down on this pedal. And clearly, if you don't take into account terrain, incline, decline, you really can't tell how fast you're going. And the same thing when doctors look at TSH alone, it doesn't tell you anything about the thyroid, does it?
Not at all. In fact, you can look at TSH and T4 and still miss a lot of the different defects that are occurring with thyroid physiology.
What do you see most often in patients when you look at malfunctioning thyroids? Is it more hypo or hyper?
Hypo, by far. Oh, by far. And when you say what's most common, I'll tell you what, and we can get into the physiology of it in just a bit. There's a lot of, levothyroxine is the number 4 prescribed drug in America today. And you know that the reference ranges on blood work is very broad. And so doctors will only prescribe that if the TSH is really pretty high. So the fact that it's the number 4 prescribed medication tells you the degree of hypothyroidism that's happening in America today.
Well, not only that, because there's a lot of subclinical. That's clinical hypothyroidism. That's frank hypothyroidism. Otherwise, they're not even prescribing it. Right. Right. That's pretty impressive.
It's a silent epidemic. It's that well known that doctors know how many people have hypothyroidism. And again, that's only looking at one particular thyroid defect. You can have a totally normal thyroid panel and still have hypothyroidism technically because you're not getting T3 into the cells.
Well, and there's another aspect that doesn't come into play when mainstream doctors talk about the thyroid, and that is the selenoenzyme cascade. I mean, you can have adequate levels of T3 and T4 in your bloodstream, but still present hypothyroid. And correct me if I'm wrong, I'm off base with this, but isn't it possible to have adequate levels but yet still present hypothyroid because the ability for T3 to perform its job is not occurring because of the selenoenzyme cascade?
That's part of it. And we could go really deep into some very cool thyroid physiology if you want. If somebody doesn't have adequate amounts of free T3, then they will have issues. But again, if free T3 cannot bind onto or activate the mitochondria in the cell, they will have frank hypothyroid symptoms despite having a completely normal thyroid panel, even done by an alternative practitioner who knows how to look at it and using a tighter reference range.
What is it that causes that to happen where the T3 has no effect on the mitochondria?
Well, you could have mitochondrial defects in the first place, and that's within the cell. So if you have mitochondrial issues, and mitochondria are really sensitive to free radical damage and oxidative stress, for one. But in terms of the receptors, if you have a vitamin A deficiency, that can cause thyroid receptor issues, high cortisol, high homocysteine, and honestly, one of the biggest things that I think plagues our society nowadays are cytokines from the immune system and inflammation.
Bingo. And you know what? Simple solution. Fish oil. It's been proven now that fish oil actually reduces inflammation on a genetic level. It switches the genes that are pro-inflammatory off. So there you go. So just take some fish oil to protect. But now let me ask you another question. What role does caffeine and lack of sleep play in thyroid dysfunction?
Well, it's when you think about what those two things really do, is it's a stress response, and stress will impact thyroid physiology. So lack of sleep and caffeine, or whatever it might be, I mean, you could be pissed off at your wife or hate your job or sit in traffic every day and it stresses you out. Cortisol will, number one, suppress pituitary function, so you have low TSH. Number two, cortisol will impact or negatively impact T4 to T3 conversion.
Mm.
And number three is it impacts the receptor site. So you really just have three strikes against you when it comes to thyroid function and thyroid having low thyroid symptoms if you have any degree of elevated cortisol or stress response. And remember, actually, cytokines do the same thing. So whether you want to call it inflammation or stress or just call them the same thing, they impact all those three things: conversion, pituitary output of TSH, and the ability for thyroid hormone to bind into a cell.
And I have to say, and I am not accredited, so I can always say stupid stuff because no one can threaten to take anything away from me. But I have to say that the majority of the people in this country today are either overproducing cortisol at the wrong times, or overproducing cortisol in general throughout the day, even late into the evening, again, because of the dependence on energy drinks to get you through the day and the lack of proper sleep and then the constant stress that we live in. Our society is a stress-driven society. There's an old saying, you either move towards pleasure or away from pain. And we become a society that doesn't move until things become painful, until we're ready to lose our house or, you know what I mean? It's like we're
totally
a high-stress world today.
Yeah, you know, and I'll be honest with you. We see a lot of people with totally flatlined cortisol, that they don't even have much cortisol output anymore at all.
Because they've been so exhausted for so long.
Well, yeah, and you mentioned the drinks, for example. I don't know that people are using those for energy much, except maybe that they're actually using it because they're so depleted that they actually need those things.
They're
so
self-medicating.
Like for them.
Yeah, they're self-medicating.
Yeah.
Now,
I'll just say this. Somebody with high cortisol probably is not going to jump on an energy drink. They'll probably be fine. It's because they're sort of in this tired and wired state. You know, they are mentally alert. They may feel a little bit fatigued, but they're okay. And it's usually the people that get the energy drinks are the ones that have low energy and they've depleted themselves to some degree.
And they're really self-medicating. They're trying to get their adrenals to produce a little cortisol at that point in time.
Well, and at that point, it's usually epinephrine. Yeah.
And then obviously the whole insulin resistance role, insulin's effect on cortisol as well, because cortisol is a reciprocal, you know, insulin's trying to shuttle glucose out of the bloodstream and cortisol is trying to liberate glycogen from the liver to keep some, baseline of glucose in the bloodstream. And we know that the majority of people today are insulin resistant, and you can go back to sleep and caffeine and point at some of that stuff as well. But I have to believe that that plays another role. The fact that we are a society of IR individuals, that also has to bang the adrenal glands to heck and cortisol levels.
Yeah, insulin is technically, it could be considered a stimulant. Here's how the loop works. Is let's say somebody's stressed, they have high cortisol. Cortisol is a glucocorticoid, so by the nature of it, it makes more glucose available for the body. Then when you have high glucose, insulin raises up in order to deal with that. Now, insulin stimulates interleukin-6, which is a cytokine, and mm-hmm. interleukin-6 stimulates cortisol. So that's really what you're looking at with that. It's an endocrinology, immunology loop that it insulin stimulates more cortisol. More cortisol, more glucose, more glucose, more insulin, more insulin, more IL-6, and then it just continues.
So, okay, so we want to talk about the thyroid, but what we basically have illustrated here is that there's a perfect storm out there, and it's driven a lot by cortisol that interferes with thyroid function. What we're going to do is this. We're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to pick up and focus more on thyroid function. We're talking today with Dr. Brian Walsh. If you want to learn more about Dr. Brian Walsh, you can go to fatisnotyourfault.com. Is that right, Dr. Walsh?
That's correct.
fatisnotyourfault.com. Well, whose fault is it? All right, we'll talk about this when we come back. Stay tuned. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. We'll be right back. Thou Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right. Buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household. Testosterone is the king of anabolic hormones, and Test Charge is unlike any testosterone amplifier you have ever tried, because only Test Charge has taxadrol, a substance that grows in only one place in the world and is only found in Test Charge. Test Charge will jack your testosterone levels like illegal agents, but rest assured, there are no banned substances in Test Charge. Test Charge is the secret weapon used by IFBB legend Flex Wheeler. And now you can join the pro ranks. Go to AAEFX.com to learn more about where you can find Test Charge today.
LG Science's pre-workout performance enhancer Anadrolic State GT has grown exponentially in popularity in recent months. In July, Anadrolic State GT was named 2010 number one pre-workout product by BestRecovery.com, as well as nominated as best pre-workout product by Bodybuilding.com. We here at LG Sciences want to give back to you, which is why, for a limited time, we will be giving customers a free 330-gram bottle of BC plus EAA hydrolyzed peptides with each purchase of Anadrolic State GT from Bodybuilding.com. That's right. Order Anadrolic State GT at Bodybuilding.com now and get your free BC plus EAA. Offer only available while supplies last.
Managing insulin is key to building muscle and staying lean. Now from NeedToBuildMuscle.net, get the most effective insulin-mimicking, insulin-sensitizing, nutrient-partitioning supplement available without a prescription. Need2Slin. Need2Slin combines scientifically proven agents that shuttle glucose out of the bloodstream and into muscle, avoiding fat accumulation while simultaneously increasing insulin sensitivity on a cellular level. Need2Slin is so powerful that it should only be taken before a meal. You can get Need2Slin by visiting NeedToBuildMuscle.net. Don't risk another meal becoming fat and not muscle. Get Need2Slin today. PJ Braun knows how to get in shape and stay in shape. He's appeared in numerous bodybuilding and fitness magazines, and now he's ready to help you. Whether you're a man or a woman, PJ Braun has the expertise to help you reach your goals faster and easier than ever before. Utilize his one-on-one distance training services, and your friends will want to know what your secret is. But we'll never tell. Services are affordable and customizable to suit your individual needs. Nutrition, training, and supplementation are all covered. Stop spinning your wheels and start building the body that you've always dreamed of. Go to pjbraun.com today. That's pjbraun.com.
Jumping higher, lifting more. It's Superhuman Radio.
Just want to mention that we have a new sponsor. You'll start hearing their spots very shortly, and that's At Large Nutrition. At Large Nutrition. Check them out. Go to atlargenutrition.com. My guest today is Dr. Brian Walsh. His website is fatisnotyourfault.com. I like that because I like to blame other people for stuff.
Well, that's the problem with our society today. And I'll be honest with you. I mean, you know, it's easy to see the people that it is their fault. You know, you go to malls, you go to McDonald's, you go to airports. You can see the people that are not eating right. They're not exercising. And really, it is their fault. There's this whole faction of society nowadays, and it really is just due to our environmental stresses that we have, that do the right things. They do the right diets. They do the right exercise programs, and good ones. And they're just not seeing any results. And it's because your physiology dictates how well you respond to diet and exercise. 50 years ago, we didn't have these physiological imbalances, so somebody could diet and exercise and get all the results they wanted to. But the reality is today, and you talked about it, overproduction of estradiol in men, overproduction of testosterone in women, insulin resistance, all these different things are causing these hormonal shifts and these systemic effects where we can't get the results that we needed to, and we really need to optimize our physiology if we want to respond to diet and exercise better.
Okay, so let's talk about the thyroid. What role does the thyroid play in this? The thyroid has been well known to help the body burn fat, right? I mean, it's kind of like a furnace.
The thyroid, and here's where people screw this up. The thyroid is your metabolic gland, and people always attribute it to fat loss because it has to do with metabolism. But how well your gut functions, how well your liver detoxifies, how well your brain works, you have thyroid receptors on your brain. You have thyroid receptors on your gallbladder. You have thyroid receptors everywhere in your body. when your thyroid slows down, everything slows down. You get dry skin because your skin can't replace itself fast enough.
I know people have thyroid disorders, especially hypothyroidism, below the knee on the shins. They usually get very, very dry, cracked skin. It almost looks like when the desert dries out, big weeping sores almost. And I know that's akin to a thyroid disorder, and it's linked to an overproduction in hyaluronic acid, which somehow the thyroid has an effect on. Maybe you can, are you familiar with that, what I'm talking about?
Yeah, it basically causes edema. What you end up getting is sort of a negative osmotic effect. Normally you have albumin in your blood, and that helps keep the fluid inside your bloodstream or your circulation. When that starts to change, where you get an osmotic shift, then what happens is it starts to leak out and into the tissues. So then that's when you start to get some of those edema and some of the other things that you see with hypothyroidism.
And what about, I mean, hair loss occurs with hypothyroidism as well, correct?
Same thing. And with each of one of these things, it's simply a lower metabolism. All the things that your body needs as a metabolic rate to function optimally, just they stop working. So hair falls out, like I said, constipation, dry skin, of course, weight gain, and mood disorders are really common as well. There's some pretty strong interactions between neurotransmitters and thyroid hormone, and that's why you get a lot of these people that have brain fog. Their brain's not firing adequately. They have depression for a similar reason.
Interesting, because brain fog usually happens in the morning, and isn't that also a result of not having adequate cortisol levels early in the morning for people who have kind of flipped their cortisol production?
Yeah, I wouldn't say cortisol has so much to do with brain fog. It's usually something else that occurs with that.
Really?
But cortisol impacts that as well, yeah. Now, people with hypothyroidism will experience brain fog all day.
Really? Wow,
yep.
That's got to be terrible. So what do you do when somebody comes into you and they present these types of symptoms? What do you do?
We run a hell of a thyroid panel.
Like, is reverse T3 really important, or is that a lot of doctors say no? Reverse T3 really isn't important. Is it important to know if there's a high level of reverse T3?
It's one more piece of data, but we don't usually run that. It looks for underconversion, and you can see underconversion if you have T4 and T3. You really don't need reverse T3. It just confirms that there's underconversion. But
okay, what about TPO, thyroid antibody? How does it? And I've never understood this. If there is a presence, is that bad, or if there's not a presence, is that bad? How does that work?
It's bad. I'll tell you what, when we talk about the degrees of hypothyroidism in America today, there are some pretty major organizations like the Endocrine Society that say autoimmune thyroid or Hashimoto's is the
right.
Number one cause of hypothyroidism today. So all those millions of people on Synthroid, there's a good chance that they might actually have an autoimmune thyroid condition. What you see is there's actually two sets of enzymes. There's thyroid peroxidase, which you mentioned, antibodies, and the antithyroglobulin antibodies. If anybody's been on thyroid medication for any period of time, they need to run those antibodies. If they're positive, then it probably means they have an autoimmune thyroid condition. And here's the key, though, and if people get anything to take away from this entire call, if you have an autoimmune thyroid condition, it's not a thyroid condition. It's an immune system condition. It just happens to be beating up on the thyroid gland. And you could treat the thyroid gland all day long, and you'll never get better because it's the immune system that's really the issue.
And see, in my opinion, and again, I can say stupid stuff, all of those immune disorders are related to nutrition. You're eating foods that you're not genetically predisposed to eat. That's increasing inflammation. It's causing your body to go, wow, we've got some bad stuff in here we got to get rid of. And it starts targeting the wrong things like organs.
It's a big part of it, but also some of these chemicals and pesticides have been known to trigger some of these autoimmune conditions. I'll tell you what, cortisol has been shown to do that. High levels of estrogen have been shown to do that. Heavy metals have been shown to do that, but certainly food sensitivities and just a crappy diet can do that as well.
What if I personally am taking 25 micrograms of Cytomel a day as a replacement dose of Cytomel because I'm 52 years old and I'm trying to keep all of the plates spinning, so to speak. You think that's a mistake for me to do?
I can't say that at all, whether it's a mistake or not. Honestly, you have to take the big picture in. You have to get a good thyroid panel to find out what your T3 levels are normally. And then, me personally, I like to try to optimize physiology. It's what we were given. And there's many different ways nutritionally that we can optimize things. There are a few things that can lower T3 even despite having normal T4 levels. Again, cortisol, cytokines, inflammation, selenium deficiency, all of these things. So if we had all those things working well for you and you still had, for some reason, low conversion, low T3, then maybe you might be a candidate for some kind of replacement therapy. But I use that as a last case scenario.
Last reason.
You have to optimize physiology first.
What about the consumption? What about fluoride, chlorine in our drinking water? What about bromine in our bread? What about all of the halogens that compete with iodine? How much of that really makes a difference, or is that just, you know, BS?
No, you know what? I think that it does make a difference. The thyroid is very sensitive to chemical insults, and some of those chemicals being halogens, like the ones that you mentioned. And those can absolutely displace iodine. So, you know, whether or not those probably wouldn't cause the degree of autoimmune thyroid that's out there today, but it certainly can cause a decrease in your thyroid's ability to make thyroid hormone. It definitely plays a role. They seem to suck some of that stuff up, and it does displace iodine, which, of course, is responsible in the thyroid hormone production of the gland.
And let's talk about iodine. You know, I took a potassium iodide tablets one time, and a supplement company sold them, and I bought them. I wanted to try them. And I was also taking in combination with that a desiccated porcine thyroid supplement that was supposed to be devoid of any T3 or T4.
Yeah.
Which was this, you know, the whole glandular thing, like versus, you know, replaces like and repairs like and so on. And so I'm
right.
taking this
yep.
stuff. And then I have a client. I mean, I had a young lady on the show named Crispin Sullivan, and she told me that taking the dose, I think I was taking 25 milligrams, I think is the normal tablet size of calcium,
yep.
I mean, of potassium iodide.
Yep.
And she said, that's going to destroy your thyroid. I said, really? She goes, oh, that's way too high a dose. She goes, that's you know, that is only for people who, and I forget what she says, when it's some sort of a therapy that if you think your iodine has been compromised, you take this stuff for a period of time and then you stop. But is it safe to supplement with iodine?
Iodine is a really hot topic right now, a really hot topic. The reality is a lot of people are probably somewhat iodine deficient. The problem is that some of these people are actually not only recommending 25 milligrams, but 50 milligrams in relatively high doses. Now, there's a clinical place for high-dose iodine. Women with fibrocystic breasts or any kind of cystic ovaries seems to be helpful with things like that. It probably won't hurt too many people. One of the things that you might get is it starts to push out some of that fluoride and some of the bromines and the halogens out of the thyroid gland because such high-dose iodine. But some of the research that these guys are doing on iodine is really interesting, and it's pretty compelling too. You know, understand that where we get the recommended daily allowance is to prevent disease.
Right.
So when you look at the recommended dose of iodine, and what's actually physiologically, if you look at what's required to actually make thyroid hormone, it's you know, micrograms.
Right.
So it's not very much, but it does seem that people could possibly benefit from a higher dose of iodine. But again, that you know. You can never make some broad recommendation that everybody needs X number of milligrams of
sure.
iodine. It'll wreck some people and other people.
And so that means that iodine is not something that we should take willy-nilly and just go, well, it comes in 25 milligram tablets. I'm just going to take one of these a day. You really do need to get back to testing. You have to, huh?
Oh, absolutely. I don't think we should take anything willy-nilly. I mean, you probably saw that study. It came out about a month ago or two about calcium supplementation.
Actually causing heart attacks.
Yeah. Right? I'll tell you what. You know, that wasn't like the Journal of the Medical American Association, you know, saying vitamin E is garbage. That was a really well-done study. And it really, I mean, there's a lot of people that took note of that and said, you know what, maybe we shouldn't be recommending calcium for our patients.
I have been decrying the rudimentary, regular prescriptions by doctors to their female patients and male patients to take 1,200 milligrams of calcium a day without reviewing these individuals' diets to see what kind of calcium they're getting in their diets already. But just take 1,200 milligrams of calcium a day. And I've decried it for a long time. I've said it's not a good idea. It's dangerous. Having high levels of calcium in the blood in the absence of vitamin D and magnesium is dangerous, and especially with vitamin D, because if putting calcium in the blood but not telling it where to go with vitamin D is just sandblasting everything inside your body. And on top of that, calcium is an excitatory agent to the nervous system, and it increases the calcium channel. It increases the heart, the pressure that the heart beats at. It increases the way you react to stimulus. It's like I've never believed in that. And I believe that if people looked at their diets, they're probably getting 800 milligrams, 1,000 milligrams of calcium in their day anyway.
Well, that's and that's what I think the studies talked about, is that people out on average, just through dietary intake, are probably getting about 800 milligrams a day on average.
And that's more than, and the reality is you don't need a whole lot of calcium if you're taking adequate amounts of vitamin D or getting adequate amounts of sunlight to promote vitamin D, because that fixes everything. It keeps the calcium in the bones where it belongs.
Well, so. and then there's more with that too. I mean, I'm a little nervous about this whole vitamin D movement as well, to the exclusion of some of the other fat soluble vitamins, specifically vitamin K, which I think will probably be big in a couple years.
Yeah, it's already getting big now. I'm starting to see some of the stuff from some of the Life Extension Foundation groups talking about vitamin K.
It's great stuff, but you have these doctors that are prescribing massive amounts of vitamin D, you know, and I don't know. That too by itself can probably increase atherosclerosis to some degree, it seems. But at any rate, it just gets back to what you were saying, that, you know, it's really not just one size fits all for everybody, and you really have to take a lot of things into the equation.
So if somebody reaches out to you and they're just, you know, they're concerned about their thyroid, you order a very, very comprehensive panel. Is that something they have to come to you for, or is that you do like a blood spot test?
Yeah, no, we'll do it. Most doctors won't. You can ask them for certain markers, and most doctors will tell you they're just not necessary.
Well, that's because insurance is dictating. The doctor never wants to get caught in the middle of having to tell the insurance company they have to pay for something they don't want to pay for. And that's what
having the patients upset with you because you ran a panel that the insurance company didn't cover, and now it has to come out of the pocket of the patient.
Many times I've had to sign a document when I've requested specific panels be done, and my doctor would say, I'll do them, but you need to understand this, that you may have to pay for them. You'll have to sign this. And I've done that, you know, so I know that that's the catch 22 with being educated about what you need as opposed to just going by what your doctor is telling you. We're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, I want to talk more about Fat Is Not Your Fault. We're talking today with Dr. Brian Walsh. You can learn more about him by going to fatisnotyourfault.com. That website is going to be changed very shortly to Fat Is Carl Lenore's Fault. So check that out. We'll be right back. There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in Can-See eye drops. I've been using Can-See for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find Can-See eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. Can-See eye drops. The name says it all.
Protein is the building block of muscle. Protein-rich diets have been shown to not only be heart healthy, but also burn body fat through the thermogenic effect of protein in the digestive process. But getting enough protein each day isn't easy. That's why I use True Protein from TrueProtein.com. TrueProtein.com has an incredible variety of flavors. My favorite is chocolate coconut. And you can even create your own custom blend. Mix whey, casein, and egg, or throw in a little beef isolate. And you can save 5% off the already low price when you use the coupon code SHRADIO. Visit TrueProtein.com today and let them know Carl sent
you. Testosterone is the king of anabolic hormones, and Test Charge is unlike any testosterone amplifier you have ever tried, because only Test Charge has taxadrol, a substance that grows in only one place in the world and is only found in Test Charge. Test Charge will jack your testosterone levels like illegal agents, but rest assured, there are no banned substances in Test Charge. Test Charge is the secret weapon used by IFBB legend Flex Wheeler. And now you can join the pro ranks. Go to AAEFX.com to learn more about where you can find Test Charge today. All of your favorite supplements are waiting for you at the best prices and fastest customer service at OrbitNutrition.com. Even some of the more popular supplements advertised right here on Superhuman Radio. They carry All-American EFX, LG Sciences, and Primordial Performance products at the best prices on the net. Visit OrbitNutrition.com today and check out their complete line. Give them a chance to fill your order. You won't be disappointed. OrbitNutrition.com. The best supplements in the universe are at OrbitNutrition.com.
The federal government is more aggressive than ever prosecuting anabolic steroid-related cases. Whether you're a physician, supplement company, or citizen, ignorance of the law is not a defense. Buying from overseas pharmacies, large numbers of patients on hormone replacement therapy, and releasing new hormone-based supplements can all be red flags to the federal government. Don't take chances. You need attorneys that have years of experience defending anabolic steroid-related cases.
You need J. Clark Baird and Bill Butler. Knowledge is power. Know where you stand before the federal government comes knocking. Go to SteroidDefenseLawyers.com. That's SteroidDefenseLawyers.com. Go today and be safer tomorrow. Get stronger. Feel younger. It's Superhuman Radio.
David Wilson posted on my Facebook for people to post their True Protein custom mix, since True Protein is now a sponsor of the show and they have the greatest variety of custom mix. You can make any custom blend of protein powders you want. You can use beef isolate, you can use whey, you can use egg, you can use rice protein, anything you want. And he's asking people to go to my Facebook page, which obviously if you're not my friend, go to Facebook and look for Carl Lenore, to post your favorite custom mix. David Wilson's is 25% micellar casein, 25% whey protein isolate, cross-flow microfiltration, 45% whey protein concentrate, 5% creatine monohydrate, the vitamin mineral mix, and Splenda as the sweetener. So go to my Facebook page and post your favorite custom mix by TrueProtein.com. My guest today is Dr. Brian Walsh, and now we're going to talk about something he's passionate about, and that is the subject of his website, fatisnotyourfault.com. So when you say fat is not your fault, what do you mean, obviously you're not trying to give the people out there who are not doing anything constructive to change their bodies an excuse. But you're saying that there's a margin of people out there who are doing all the right things and they're not seeing any results. Why aren't they seeing results?
Physiology. That's what it boils down to. And I'll tell you.
Are you talking about genetics? Is it genetics? You're saying, well, some people are genetic.
Okay. Well, let's just take an example and you'll see where this is going. Let's say you have two genetically identical twins, males, and one of them, for some reason, maybe goes down to Mexico for a week and gets a gut infection, has some thyroid dysfunction and an adrenal dysfunction. Otherwise, they live together, they work at the same job, they eat the identical diet, and they have the same exercise program, everything including intensity. Which one will get better results? It's pretty clear that the one that doesn't have a thyroid, gut, or adrenal issue, right?
Right.
So that's what I said, is our physiology dictates our response to diet and exercise. So if somebody's not getting results, or as many results as they think that they should get, it's not your diet or exercise program. I mean, we have more diet books, we have more information, we have more exercise gadgets than ever before.
Right.
And it's not a deficiency in these things, or in information. Or in the case of probably your listeners, in the application of it. These people are following this stuff to a T. But if they're not getting results, it's their physiology. And it's not just about, you know, taking like creatine or something else. You have to look at what's going on in the body. And if you optimize that, then results are, they just come naturally. That's what
But the problem I find is that when you start talking about this gestalt approach to health, you lose people. They become overwhelmed because we're a silver bullet mentality society. We want to know. I mean, just look at supplements. Look at drugs. Everything is isolated. Well, here we've found the one thing. This is the one answer.
Sure.
People love that. They don't like the idea that you say, well, it could be one of these three things and we have to tweak them all. It's like, oh, no. I'm not waiting for that. Just give me the one pill that's going to fix everything all at once.
Sure. Oh, I totally agree. That's not my bag. I mean, out of integrity, I can't do that. When you know how the body works and when you know how to fix it, you can't just recommend one particular thing.
Talk about the liver a little bit. A good friend of the show, Lothar Tripke, in Germany, he listens to the show all the time. He recently asked me to do a show about the liver. But, you know, the liver is kind of like that sponge in your sink. If you don't squeeze it out and rinse it out once in a while, it gets stinky and you want to throw it away, but you can't throw your liver away. What can you do?
Well, the liver is probably more bombarded with stress today than ever before in human history. We often think of it as what metabolizes toxins, but toxins are not just pesticides and chemicals. We produce our own endogenous or internal toxins that it has to deal with. Some of the things that it deals with are these inflammatory molecules, which again, we're more inflamed than we've ever been. Also, it metabolizes and clears out hormones. So if your liver's not working well, there's a good chance that you will have hormonal imbalances just as a consequence of that. And really, there's a lot you can do. You know, I'm really not a huge, everybody needs to take massive amounts of supplements a day kind of guy.
Right.
But one of the things that I seriously, it keeps me up at night, tells you a little bit about how dorky I am when it comes to this stuff, is whether or not we as Americans need a prophylactic liver support all the time to help support liver detoxification pathways. specifically phase two. That seems to be the big issue nowadays. And it's not for lack of a protein diet. We just, our pathways are overburdened, they're overworked. And, you know, I wonder, along with a multivitamin and probiotics and fish oil and vitamin D.
Did I lose you, Doc? Oh, there you go.
Have some kind of prophylactic.
Do you think you do? I mean, there's a couple products out there. Something Clear. I can't think of the name of it right now that a lot of physicians sell to help you detox your liver. Do you know which one I'm talking about?
I do. I tell you, my family uses that, not that one, but a similar type of functional detoxification.
Which one do you use?
We use one called ClearVite.
ClearVite.
But
okay.
There's Ultra Clear, MetaClear.
That's what I'm thinking of.
There's a ton of them. Yeah, I have a 2-year-old boy, and he takes it too. He loves this stuff. And I, you know what? I want to support him and his liver and his ability to detoxify, early on.
See, I'm with you on this. I really feel like the liver, that analogy I gave is really good. That sponge that's on your sink that you use to clean the dirty dishes every single day, if you don't squeeze it, rinse it out, and even put it in the dishwasher and wash it, it stinks so bad. It gets dirty. Your liver, you can't squeeze it. You can't pull it out and rinse it out. So how do you keep it clean? Now, I happen to be a strong believer in a couple things, milk thistle. And these not in too high doses because they actually have a point of diminishing returns, but, milk thistle, N-acetylcysteine, and whey protein because they all promote glutathione production.
Well, but sulfur containing. So, there's a lot of things that can be found in those. And those are some good ones for sure. Milk thistle, of course, is the one everybody knows about, but.
but do you think that that's adequate? Do you think that's enough? Or do you think that we have to do more to keep the liver clean?
I would almost suggest that maybe that's just not enough. I mean, milk thistle has its own particular pathways and N-acetylcysteine and whey protein and, glutathione itself you can get, of course. But if you take, it's probably enough. I think that would be bare minimum. There are some pretty good liver products out there as well that are really, they have more of a broad spectrum of compounds. And remember, in phase two, there's actually a number of different pathways that are all totally exclusive to the other one. One of them is actually glucose-dependent, glucuronidation. So you need a certain amount of healthy glucose metabolism to push that particular pathway or sulfation or some of these different pathways. So there are some better products out there. I mean, but if somebody's going to do that as a baseline, I think that would probably be okay.
Now, I'm a big proponent of Brazil nuts for my selenium as opposed to a selenium supplement. What do you think of that?
Yeah, it's great.
I eat 3 or 4 Brazil nuts a day. You think that's too many? You think, because the average Brazil nut has about a milligram of selenium in it.
Yeah, no, that's probably fine. I mean, it's probably fine. It's nutrient deficiency. It's ironic. A lot of nutritionists nowadays, they're all about the nutrient deficiency. Which one are you deficient in, and that's going to fix your problems. But it's not that. We have massive physiological things going on with our immune system, with our nervous system, with neurotransmitters, with hormones, and all these different things. And it's really, honestly, if somebody thinks it's a selenium deficiency and only takes selenium, that's not going to fix their problem. So, and with our diet nowadays, you have people that are either doing one of two things. They're on a great diet. Chances are they're probably getting adequate amounts of nutrients because they're eating a healthy diet.
Right.
You get people that are eating an unhealthy diet, and things are so fortified today that, they're probably getting, and they're eating so much of it, they're probably getting a certain amount of it. So, while nutrient deficiencies do exist, that's not the big issue today. It's inflammation, it's cortisol, it's insulin, it's blood sugar mismanagement, and these types of things, and neurotransmitters, which we haven't talked about. But
why don't we talk a little bit about neurotransmitters? We have a couple minutes before we go into the break, and we can pick it up on the way out. What's important? What should we be doing?
Well, you want to get back to thyroid for a second. Here's something that people never talk about. The hypothalamus, and it produces TRH to stimulate the pituitary to make TSH to stimulate the thyroid. What two neurotransmitters are required for the hypothalamus to even work in the first place is dopamine and serotonin. If you don't have serotonin and dopamine adequately, the hypothalamus, and specifically it's called the paraventricular nucleus of the hypothalamus, doesn't make TRH. If you don't make TRH, the pituitary doesn't get the sense to make TSH, the thyroid doesn't get the sense to make thyroid hormone. So, as far upstream as you can possibly get, you need serotonin and dopamine to even have the thyroid hormone physiology cascade work properly. The other one is in guys, dopamine. Dopamine is required for testosterone production, actually luteinizing hormone production.
Right, and growth hormone.
And growth hormone, and acetylcholine is important as well. There's this huge movement nowadays about neurological training and these different ways of using your nervous system to increase strength and such. But if you don't have adequate neurotransmitters and you pass a stimulus down a neuron, it doesn't cross the synaptic cleft to get to the next neuron unless you have adequate amounts of neurotransmitters.
Right.
So I feel like everybody's talking about the nervous system, which is great, but if you don't have neurotransmitters adequately in the synaptic cleft, you can't pass along one stimulus on a neuron to the next neuron because it's just simply not there. So, and I'll tell you what, a lot of these, when you look at these neurotransmitters and how they're synthesized and what can impact them, it's all the same things. Look at ADD. ADD, ADHD is massive. And in fact, it's even in the adult population nowadays. Things like depression are massive today. So we have this huge insurgence of neurotransmitter imbalances or just frank deficiencies, and you better believe that they're causing hormonal imbalances and everything else. And I'll tell you what, if all you do is you give somebody hormones, you're not fixing the problem.
Right, right. So do you think that it's good to supplement with precursors like Mucuna, Purinus for the production of dopamine or...
For dopamine?
Yeah, or 5-HTP or one of those precursors to serotonin?
I always believe in assessing first. So just to, again, we already talked about this. That'd be like saying 1,200 milligrams of calcium for everybody. And
yeah.
It's just, that's not, you can actually screw somebody up by pushing certain neurotransmitters too far and too fast. So doing an assessment first, always assess, figure out what that particular person needs, and then absolutely, Mucuna is great. That's basically natural L-dopa, and it's very potent, very potent.
Now, what about the idea that you're taking the, and maybe you can explain this in just a couple minutes, and if not, we'll come out of the break and talk about it. But when Parkinson's disease patients take carbidopa and levodopa, it actually progresses the disease faster over time. And the assumption is that the abundance of dopamine in the brain is now blowing out these neurons. Do you have to worry about that if you're supplementing with Mucunas to increase your own dopamine production?
Probably not that, but you want to know the story about Muhammad Ali. He was taking...
I know what you're going to say. Wasn't he hypothyroid when he got his head punched, his bell
was.
Rang? Yeah. And you know you know who else was hypothyroid for most of his life? Michael J. Fox.
Yeah. And you know what? And Muhammad Ali, just at the sense, you know, who he was taking massive amounts of T3. And it was blowing out his substantia nigra, which is, you know, your primary dopamine center in your brain. And yeah, I mean, he theoretically could have given himself his condition now by overstimulating the substantia nigra and dopamine production in his brain. So, you know, you ask a good question, anything in moderation is probably fine.
Right.
And our body does have checks and balances so that we tend to not be able to overdo things. But, you know, I wouldn't do that willy-nilly. I would only do that if somebody actually needed that.
Yeah.
Symptomatically.
All right, let's take our last commercial break, and when we come back, we will finish up the show with Dr. Brian Walsh. You can learn more about Dr. Brian Walsh by visiting fatisnotyourfault.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right. Buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household. Turinabol from primordialperformance.com is a halidrol clone. Turinabol will give you up to 15 pounds of lean body mass in as little as 6 weeks. Since Turinabol does not aromatize, there's no conversion to estrogen. Turinabol takes advantage of the patented Liquivade technology to ensure the maximum delivery of this powerful anabolic agent. Users of Turinabol report increased strength and lean gains with little side effects. Get Turinabol today while supplies last at primordialperformance.com. Don't wait for Turinabol to be added to the federal ban list. Turinabol. Introducing SNI Global. SNI Global carries everything both the weekend warrior and serious athlete needs. Whether you're looking for pre-workout, post-workout, whey protein, mass builders, anabolic agents, performance enhancers, or energy boosters, you'll find it all at SNIGlobal.com. Want to train like a machine? Then get to SNI Global today. Check out their performance pack, loaded with over 10,000 grams of potent ingredients designed to increase energy, strength, muscle growth, and recovery. Go to SNIGlobal.com today. SNI Global. Train like a machine. Turinabol from PrimordialPerformance.com is a Haladrol clone. Turinabol will give you up to 15 pounds of lean body mass in as little as 6 weeks. Since Turinabol does not aromatize, there's no conversion to estrogen. Turinabol takes advantage of the patented Liquivade technology to ensure the maximum delivery of this powerful anabolic agent. Users of Turinabol report increased strength and lean gains with little side effects. Get Turinabol today while supplies last. At PrimordialPerformance.com. Don't wait for Turinabol to be added to the federal ban list. Turinabol. Testosterone is the king of anabolic hormones. And Test Charge is unlike any testosterone amplifier you have ever tried. Because only Test Charge has taxadrol, a substance that grows in only one place in the world and is only found in Test Charge. Test Charge will jack your testosterone levels like illegal agents. But rest assured, there are no banned substances in Test Charge. Test Charge is the secret weapon used by IFBB legend Flex Wheeler. And now you can join the pro ranks. Go to AAEFX.com to learn more about where you can find Test Charge today.
Listen strong. It's Superhuman Radio.
Yeah! Throw your hands in the air right now, man.
That's Professor Axel.
Joe Crack the Dawn.
Professor Axel.
Squad. Set my dick down.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. My guest today, Dr. Brian Walsh. Check out his website, fatisnotyourfault.com. Okay, so let's kind of wrap this up a little bit and bring it back to the thyroid for a minute. So people really need to have a comprehensive test done. We know that already. But if their thyroid is compromised, is it pretty much end of story? They're going to have to just get on something? Or do you find that most people can correct this problem with the proper steps?
They can absolutely correct it. Because, again, what are we talking about? We're talking about possibly low serotonin and dopamine causing the whole issue in the first place. Maybe it's pituitary suppression. Maybe the thyroid's not working well. Maybe it's a conversion issue. We didn't even talk about thyroid binding globulin, which holds on to thyroid hormone. If that's all balanced...
Let's talk about that. Doesn't estradiol play a role in the binding of thyroid hormone?
Absolutely. Estrogen increases all binding proteins. So cortisol binding protein, thyroid binding globulin, sex hormone binding globulin, estrogen increases all of those things. Can happen too. We talked about resistance essentially on the thyroid receptors.
Right.
If somebody has really high testosterone, that will actually push down thyroid binding globulin, which sounds good because now you have all this free thyroid hormone available. But you know this, that this is how the body works with any hormones. If you have an excess of any hormone, the body shuts down receptors. So now you have all this free T3 floating around, which sounds great, but if there's too much of that, because it's your metabolic hormone, and because your body knows that you're going to burn up too fast, if you have all that floating around, it will start to shut down receptor sites, and somebody can actually be hypothyroid in terms of symptoms, but have high, not even normal, but high levels of free thyroid hormone due to low thyroid binding globulin. So at any rate, the point being is if it's a serotonin dopamine deficiency, you can correct that. Pituitary suppression, you can correct that. You fix cortisol, fix inflammation. Thyroid issues, same thing. Conversion issues, you can correct. Binding issues, you can correct. Thyroid binding globulin issues, you can correct. Now, not in everybody, but you know, I mean, nutrition, if it's done right, can fix a lot of these things that are going on. And it's not just about going on.
Well, now let's talk about something else. A large number of the people who listen to my show are athletes, and they are using super physiological doses of testosterone, for instance, maybe 1,000 milligrams a week, and even more, some 2,000 and 3,000 milligrams a week. So with that being said, you're saying that, and it's a natural approach because we know that the thyroid, is shut down with super physiological doses of testosterone. It's a natural approach to take Cytomel, as a replacement to that. But so you're saying it doesn't matter because the receptors are being shut down.
Well, sure, and that's why somebody uses a certain amount of testosterone for a cycle, they get a certain amount of results, and then that same dose won't work anymore. It's just with testosterone. But same thing with Cytomel. They'll probably have to increase their dose slowly, eventually, because the receptors will shut down. Our body's built for survival. Honestly, it's not necessarily built for, you know, to be the biggest person in the gym or strongest person or the fastest person on the track. We want that, and that's great. And I have no problem if people want to use hormones. But the problem is that the body, if it senses that it's not going to survive because of something you're doing, will try to change that in some
way. Isn't it adequate enough? Isn't that why cycles work? Isn't it best that if a guy's running 1,000 milligrams of testosterone a week for 3 months, that he come back down to a physiological dose for an equivalent amount of time, that won't the body correct itself then? Once you get up that high, it's never going to respond again that way.
Well, and everybody's a little different. I think the body can bounce back. The problem is, and people see this also with thyroid hormones. If you're on thyroid hormones for a really long time, it seems that it suppresses your pituitary's ability to make TSH permanently. You probably get a little bit back, but maybe not as much as you normally
do. What's a really long time?
Well, I mean, you get some people that have been on it for years, you know.
Okay.
In some cases, 5, 10, 15 years.
I mean, I've been taking this Cytomel now for about 2 months. But there's actually days, I can go 3 or 4 days where I forget about it and don't take it.
Yep.
I don't notice any difference in my, you know, I don't know.
See, and that's what I'm saying. I think, if this were me, this is just my opinion, I'd say, you know, go off of it for whatever, a few weeks, try to let your body bounce back a little bit, run a complete thyroid panel, and find out what your body's able to do by itself. You might not even need it.
Yeah, yeah. And I am going to stop. I actually took it to enhance, some fat loss a little bit more than anything else. And that's why I'm only taking 25 micrograms a day, because that's so very insignificant compared to what some of these athletes use. I know athletes that use 75, 100 micrograms a day minimum as a fat burner. And, you know, so.
Yeah.
But no, I am going to stop using it actually, this week. I'll probably stop using it and see what happens. Cause I don't know. I'll tell you the one thing I did notice. Really, this is funny and this is kind of worth talking about. When I very first started using it, I'm a big proponent, a believer that the tissue in the closest proximity to the gland becomes the most dependent on that hormone. Kind of like when you're a kid and you're at a concert and you sit close to the speakers, you kind of become adjusted to that sound level. And when I first started using Cytomel, I noticed when I swallowed, I had this funny feeling right in the area of my thyroid. And I got the feeling that that area of my throat became accustomed to a higher level of thyroid hormone, and now my thyroid wasn't producing it, and it felt funny when I swallowed. Have you ever heard that before?
Well, not from taking Cytomel, no, but it makes sense, sure.
Yeah, I just...
There's a lot of things. I mean, it could have been like a mild thyroid inflammation for some reason, or there could have been a few things. You know, most thyroid hormone, though, when it's produced, is immediately bound to thyroid binding globulin, about 98.7% of it. It's almost all bound. And it's really for transport. Otherwise, it's just like you're saying. If you don't have that, then it would just immediately act on all the tissues right around your thyroid gland. So it's a transport mechanism. But yeah, it's curious. No, I don't know. It's curious.
Yeah, it was just a funny feel. Like when I would swallow, I felt like there was something like a lump in my throat every now and then. It was just the first week that I started using it. Then it went away, and I just assumed it was from my thyroid downregulating production. And the local tissue going, hey, you know, where's that T3 that we became accustomed to? Something
maybe.
Like that.
I mean, your thyroid doesn't make much T3 in the first place, so it only makes about 7% of your output of thyroid hormone.
How important is T4? I mean, everybody talks about T3 being the bioactive form of thyroid hormone, but T4 must do something, right?
Yeah, I mean, it does seem like it's inactive, and it just acts more of a pro-hormone. But we're learning things all the time. Remember we were just talking about TRH, thyrotropin-releasing hormone, from the hypothalamus?
Right.
That's a neuropeptide. It doesn't just communicate with the pituitary. It's a neuropeptide that regulates the autonomic system in part. So if somebody is on thyroid hormone, for example, they're suppressing TRH. You suppress TRH, then gut function can be impacted, pancreatic can be impacted, gallbladder can be impacted. Basically, because it's a neuropeptide on the brainstem and can impact the
You know, that's really interesting, because I read an article years ago that indicated to me that people who are hypothyroid had a higher probability of being having hiatal hernias, because thyroid hormone somehow can be manufactured in the upper area of the gut. Have you ever heard of that?
We didn't even talk about this. There's two thyroid hormones, T3 sulfate and T3 acetic acid. They're inactive forms of T3 that are activated by its intestinal sulfatase, which is an enzyme that depends on healthy bacteria. So our gut does convert about 20% of our thyroid hormone output to active T3. That's inactive if you can't convert it. So, yeah, this has, you know, this is how we started it out. Your thyroid... There are receptors for thyroid hormone on every cell of your body. So your gut and your liver and, you know, your eyeballs, everything acts on thyroid, because everything has a metabolic rate. Anything that has a mitochondria is going to have a receptor site for thyroid hormone. And, like I said, and we're learning now, is that some of your thyroid hormones are actually converted in your gut. So there's way more to this.
Yeah, this is very interesting. Very interesting stuff.
It's fascinating.
So what do you suggest people do if they suspect that they may have a hypothyroid condition? Just reach out to you at your website? How do you want people to reach out to you?
Sure. I can give another website where they can actually contact me. Is Dr. So it's Dr. Brian, B-R-Y-A-N, P as in Paul, Walsh, W-A-L-S-H, drbrianpwalsh.com. And you can get a hold of me there. I can, but all over the U.S. as well. And I can run blood chemistries from here, where I live. We can get a blood chemistry done, and you know, there's a variety of different ways.
Now, what state are you in for people who are close by?
I'm in Maryland.
Oh, okay, excellent. I spent some time in Timonium, unfortunately for me,
yeah.
When I was a kid working on the racetrack. Yeah, I had to go take care of a couple of horses in Timonium, Maryland. It's a nice beach area over there. Very, very pretty.
Yeah, it's all right.
Listen, yeah, it's all right. Anyway,
I'm here for a girl. That's all I can say.
Hey, I know what that's like. That's a good reason.
Right.
You know what? The real estate industry ought to promote more people falling in love, because there'd be a lot more moves and homes purchased and sold. So anyway.
Yeah. That's the reason I'm here.
So they should go to Brian P. Walsh, Dr. Brian, Dr. Brian, B-R-Y-A-N, P like Paul, Walsh.com, and they can communicate with you there.
Yep,
and you can set up for them to have blood work done and evaluate them, but they have to have blood work done. There's no two ways about it.
That's the most fundamental test that anybody should run. There are some great functional labs today, really cool stuff. But you cannot beat a basic blood chemistry when it's read correctly and finding some of these underlying physiological imbalances. So absolutely, that's the first place everybody should start.
What role does the thyroid play on the heart? They're both very close together, and keeping in mind my theory on proximity. Does the thyroid affect the heart? You have people have arrhythmias and stuff like that. Does that have any role with the thyroid?
Well, it can. Again, think about metabolism. So if somebody's hyper, you know, one of the symptoms that they have is irregular heartbeats or fast heartbeat. So it definitely does. And incidentally, people with hypothyroidism, they can develop low blood pressure. Sometimes they can get high blood pressure, too, because of volume changes of their blood. But that's one of the things that they also will see. You'll see a low blood pressure, low heart rate, especially in these people. And so their
bradycardia type low heart rate? Or
yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Interesting.
So it's, you know, again, the thing that I want people to understand is when you think thyroid, don't think fat loss. Think metabolism.
Well, and then let me ask you a question on that, because we're coming to the end of the show. Athletes, hard training individuals. I mean, I train really hard. I'm 52 years old, and I train harder than most 50-year-old men. I've heard that training hard can also suppress thyroid function.
Well, again, it's a stress, and stress will suppress thyroid function, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, and there was a really interesting study I saw that they had two groups of people that took a sauna, basically, so they heated themselves up. What happens is in both cases, their TSH was impacted. They basically, their body was too hot, and so then it tried to shut down thyroid production somewhat. People that went into a cold shower afterwards to do the opposite of the
heat we experience. Call that contrasting. Yeah, go ahead.
Absolutely. Oh, contrast is what a great thing, by the way. We do that all the time. But their TSH normalized. So, you know, there's stress of any kind, whether it's thermic stress or heat, or whether it's physiological stress. Any of these things can suppress thyroid function, in addition to, you know, excess thyroid is what I would say. Or excess exercise. If that's done in excess, then you'll get some suppression of the thyroid as well.
Listen, Dr. Walsh, I want to thank you for coming on Superhuman Radio today.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. It was a lot of fun. I'm glad to be here.
There you go. I'm an intelligent host, ain't I?
you know what? I'm telling you. Next time, you're out in Arizona, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll grab some thyroid-suppressing coffee next time.
There you go. All right. That sounds like a plan. All right. Well, listen, thanks so much for coming on the show, and thanks to everybody for listening today. We'll have another live episode of Superhuman Radio for you tomorrow, so tune in then.